Our subject, of course, is the Godly Father. Back on Mother's Day, I did one on the Godly Mother. Children, we're told, are a heritage or a gift of the Lord there in Psalm 127 and verse 3. They're given by God. Whenever Jacob was in his last few days, Joseph went to see his father. It's pretty well, reading between the lines, he's going to see him for the last time. And Joseph takes his sons with him. And I don't know whether Jacob had seen them before or forgot, or, you know, lots of things possible there. But he asks Joseph, he said, who are these? I'm sure they, you know, maybe they've grown up, changed over a few years, whatever the case is. Who are these? And Joseph said, these are my sons whom God has given me. There we go. They're a gift from God, you see. All the way back then, knew that to be the case. It's a grave responsibility to bring a child into the world, and graver yet, to train that child in the way it ought to go, for every child has a soul that is destined to live somewhere for eternity. Remember that you're raising a child, and the soul's the important thing, not other things. You know, that they're a good ball player, or they're a good student. Those things I know are important. But they pale in comparison to the soul of that child. And it's not likely that any mortal will have more influence on the spiritual welfare of children than the parent, mother and father. And I think that's the case, even if you were raised by parents who were not Christians. They can still teach you a lot of things, impart a lot of things to you. So it's good that we consider something like this. And the very first thing I'd like, and I'm also thinking, you know, you hardly ever stop being a father. I've found that to be the case. And somehow along the way, I picked up another one. You know, I mean, Jenny got married, and Sean's just like a son to us, not the son-in-law, just like a son. And now I'm in the place to where they call up for advice and other things like that. I guess I've become the like the old man of the mountain that you go to, you know, for sage advice and other things like that. And that's fine. That's fine. I also have grandchildren. And I find myself a lot of times repeating things to them that I told my own children. And I mean, it's always just a delight to watch them and to see things dawn on them, you know, my dad used to say, when the light bulb comes on in there. He used to always say that about me. He says, when the light bulb comes on in there, and, you know, and they, wow, you know, it's really a treat. The first thing I'd like for us to consider is how the Godly Father is to be the spiritual leader of his home. Now, I think that's true unhesitatingly. Now, I appreciate the fact that sometimes circumstances, maybe beyond one's control, means that a father is absent from the home. I understand that. And in those cases, that mothers do the best that they can. But there's nothing like having a mother and a father. There's nothing like the influence that a father can be. And the Bible tells us that the Godly Father is to be the spiritual leader of his home. And too many times today, unfortunately, that's not the case. He's not much of a leader in the home, and then not much spiritually either. And that's a sad state of affairs. But this is something that is authorized in the Scriptures, and I think we know this. In Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 23, the husband is the head of the wife, Christ is the head of the church, he's himself being the Savior of the body. Well, he's the head of the wife. And what's implied there is Christ is the head of the church. Well, he's the head of the wife. He's the head of the household. In chapter 6 and verse 4, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline or nurture and admonition, instruction of the Lord. And I think about that. And well, the fathers there, it could mean parents. That's possible. but wouldn't, even if it meant parents, and go ahead and say that it means parents. Aren't fathers included in that? Well, sure they are. So we can understand how there's application in all of this, and this authorizes things. And I also consider the examples we find in the Scriptures. There are many examples, but I'm thinking about Joshua, for example, in Joshua chapter 24, verse 15, as he gathers all of Israel before him. And I mean to tell you, he kind of lays down the law. He's pretty blunt about what he has to say. And he tells them, you know, now this is it. This is where you need to make up your minds. Now, either you serve those gods that were over there in Egypt, where your fathers were, or those gods over across the river, or the gods of the Amorites in the land in which you dwell. You choose. You choose to serve those gods or the God that delivered you out of Egypt. And then he says this, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Great statement, isn't it? But do you know what he's saying? As for me and my house. He's saying that as what? Up there at the top, as the spiritual leader of his home. He's saying that. Cornelius, there in Acts chapter 10 and verse 2, he's a good man. And apparently he was a good man that extended to others who were in his house. Even his servants recognized he's a good man. And God even said in a vision to Peter, he's a good man. That's what it boils down to. And what did this good man do? Well, you find out that there's clues there that tell us he's the spiritual leader of the home. Because he has this vision to send for Peter over in Joppa. So he sends one. Now, he knows that Peter's coming. And what does he do as he knows that Peter's coming? Well, he gathers everybody together. He tells them, I've got an idea that there would be some excitement somewhere in his voice. We've got a man coming here who's going to tell us words whereby all of us can be saved. I think he would be. There would be some excitement there about that. And he gathered up everybody he could. He got him over there at his house. Friends and relatives. Servants too. Let's hear this. Well, that's a great thing, isn't it? But something that can be accomplished, you know, when someone is a spiritual leader of the home and this is recognized. But now there's another thing here on the other side of this issue. Turn back to 1 Samuel chapter 3. In 1 Samuel chapter 3, there's Eli, the one who kind of raised Samuel to adulthood and trained him to be a prophet and a priest. But Eli had a flaw, because Eli's sons, they were not much. And verse 13, God says, I have told him, Eli, that I'm about to judge his, Eli's house forever for the iniquity which he knew. Now he knew this. It's not ignorance. Can't pass it off. He knew this was going on. Because his sons brought a curse on themselves. Now watch. And he did not rebuke them. God's going to judge the one who neglects the important task of being the spiritual leader in the home. I think that really brings it home to us. I think that really tells us how important this is, and it should not just be dismissed out of hand. The second thing is that the godly father must provide materially for his children. And this is something that's an absolute. In 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 18, you read this, that if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his household. You see that? You know, we're going to point this out specifically now for those of his household. Well, then he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever, or the old version has, infidel. Well, once again, that sounds like pretty serious business. He's to do his best to provide food and clothing and shelter for his children, meet all their physical needs. That's what he's supposed to do. That's right. But now while doing this, there needs to be some caution exercised, for children can be given too much. I think we see evidences of that in society today. Now, they shouldn't be given too much because they need to learn about the cost of things. And they need to learn of the honorable nature of work, that it takes work to get these things, and sometimes they need to learn that themselves. We always worked out a deal with our children when they got a driver's license. You get a driver's license when you can pay your end of the car insurance. We provided them a car, put the gas in it, kept the car up and all that and everything. When they bought a car, we worked out a deal on that and everything. But you know what? I can't pay that insurance. Well, now you need to get a job. And guess what? They wanted a driver's license. They went out there and they got them a job. That's how it is out here in the real world. That's real life, see. If we don't do this, they may develop distorted values as to life, you know, if they're just given too much. That's entirely possible. But now another word of caution. Providing material things for your children is no substitute for your other responsibilities. In other words, children are not supposed to be bought off with things. Well, I haven't been much of a dad. I haven't helped you out with schoolwork. I haven't helped you out with this, that, the other, all things dads are supposed to do. But I'm going to buy you a new car. And that's supposed to make up for it. Dream on. Children need a father. Well, they think they do, but they really don't need things, do they? The godly father is also to set the right example before his children. I think that means publicly and privately now. You know, Paul says something over here. Turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 3. It's what we want to look at. Something that he says there in 2 Corinthians chapter 3 and verses 2 and 3. You are our letter written in our hearts, known and read by all men, being manifested that you are a letter of Christ, cared for by us, written not with ink, but with the Spirit of the living God, not on tablets of stone, but on tablets of human hearts. So parents, as well as other Christians, you know, we become living letters. As it says, they're known and read of all men. But especially by our children. You know, I don't think there's an adult anywhere who doesn't remember the example of his parents. Good or bad, the example of your parents. Good parents, you remember those examples. If your parents haven't been good, if they were bad parents, you remember the examples of those. We remember them all. Sure we do. And here's the thing now, on a positive note, children are going to be powerfully impressed in seeing their parents worship God, seeing their parents read the Bible, seeing their parents follow Christ daily. Children are going to be impressed in hearing their parents pray, sing praises, discuss Bible subjects, and encourage others and teach faithfulness. That's right. So we become living letters. And there are examples that ought to be set. They ought to be set in the home. Some of these examples ought to be like this. How about this? How about the Bible studied and prayer offered? You know the passages there. They're pretty well general passages. Those over in Berea, they study the Scriptures daily. I take that to mean that they probably did this somewhat at home. Okay. And then prayer is to be without ceasing in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 17. In other words, you don't cease to pray. When there's opportunities for prayer, you pray. And some of that might be at home. And that could be, you know, a great, powerful example. Now also, another one is in Titus chapter 2. Titus chapter 2, and again, this is something that's just kind of said in general. Titus chapter 2, and take a look at verses 11 and 12 here. The grace of God has appeared, bringing salvation to all men. Now watch, instructing us to deny ungodliness and worldly desires, and to live sensibly, righteously, and godly in the present age. Now, as parents and as fathers, we ought to be doing that. We ought to be denying the one and seeking the other. And what are we talking about here? Well, you have a high standard of morality. Dare say a higher standard of morality. You know, this standard of morality you see in those two verses there, that's a higher standard than the morality of the world. Oh, yeah, decidedly so. And so we should have a higher standard of morality than the world? I sure hope so. And that ought to be shown by parents. Well, yeah, absolutely. That should be the case. But also, there ought to be examples that are set in the church. And some of these include that your children see that attendance to services is something that's important. Now, also, that it's not just something that's important, but it's something that is of prime importance. In other words, you're going to do this instead of something else. Oh, our kids had ball games on Wednesday night, and they were allowed to play up to about 7 o'clock, and then they went home. They were both real good athletes. Daniel was the pitcher for his... Apparently his coach didn't believe I'd take him home. When I told him at the beginning of the year, I said, you better reschedule those games. I said, 7 o'clock comes along, he's leaving. And they didn't pay attention. They played the game. 7 o'clock, I'm in the dugout. Get your stuff, let's go. And they like they had a stroke. I guess they thought I didn't mean it. Wouldn't take him home. Guess what? They rescheduled the rest of them. But you know what? I wasn't raising a pitcher. I was raising a young man that had a soul that's eternal. That's going to last a lot longer than him being able to pitch well or whatever. Oh, how about time to go fishing? How about this? How about that? How about the other? All these things that come along and can get in the way. And we set aside attendance, and we go to these other things, and our children are going along too, and you don't say a word about it. But what's the lesson they learn? There are other things more important than attendance to services. And even when some people kind of start out at that point, that the rest of these services don't matter. Really. Really. Well, be prepared. You know, you won't have to answer to me about that. There's someone of higher authority than I don't have any authority, but there's someone of higher authority that you have to answer for that. And you find out your children got that from examples in the church. How about respect for leaders in the like the elders? Respect for the elders. If a couple of parents don't have any respect for the men who are elders in the congregation, their kids are going to have it, right? Is that how it's going to be? Is that how it's going to work? Or no respect for a Bible study teacher or a song leader or something along that line? Some children go home for dinner on Sunday afternoon to a nice meal, I like to think. I wish I could have it more often. I can't anymore. Fried chicken, mashed potatoes, gravy, some nice corn on the cob or off. With butter on it. Oh. They go to a home to a dinner like that. Nice. And some of them go home to a dinner. Fried preacher. Mashed elders. You get the picture. That's what they hear. How do you think they're going to come out? How do you think they come out with other things? There's reverence for worship. Worship God in spirit and in truth. Easy passage. A general passage. But the children are going to see their parents doing this. They're going to see them doing that when it comes time for worship and all. Or do they see him suddenly? Oh, look at that cuticle. I've got to take care of that right now. It might be fatal. I doubt it. I'm exaggerating, I know. But I tell you what. Another point, the godly father brings up his children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And you find different words there for nurture and admonition. They're burnt in my memory bank, so that's what we've got today, even though I've got a different version that says something else. But you can read about that. It's over there in Ephesians chapter 6, 1 through 4. We read verse 4. It talks about the children, the parents, all of it, working together. That's the idea. Now, as far as definitions go, I've got the nice definition here from Mr. Thayer. I like Mr. Thayer on most of his definitions. He said that nurture word over there means the whole training and education of children, which relates to the cultivation, now watch now, of mind and morals and employs for this purpose now commands and admonitions, now reproof and punishment. I pretty well think he had that right. That's what it would be talking about there. Looks to me like, in someone else's language, they might say it this way, that's the whole ball of wax, isn't it? Yeah, that's the whole thing. That's right. Now, I do have the definition for admonition. This is mine. I think admonition, it may mean a warning or it may mean encouragement. It could go either way. But for sure, it carries a pay attention with it. Either way, pay attention to this. I think really that's what an admonition's there for. What else do we find? Well, we know the passage, don't we? Back in the Old Testament, where it's been used so many times. Train up a child the way he was to go, and when he's old, he won't depart from it. Sure, we know that one. That's right. And God has given the primary responsibility of educating children. Now, think about this. There are the three things we're told that are ordained by God. There's the home, the oldest. The next one in age is actually the governments. Think about that. The governments. No, that's right. Governments. And then what comes up? Well, the church. All three ordained by God. Right? And educating children has been given to the home. It's not been given to the government. Although unless I miss things seriously or have been asleep for the last 30 years, we pretty well turned it over to the government to educate our children. How's that working, by the way? Our kids went to public school. You can raise kids in public school and they'll turn out just fine. That's if you're involved with your children and you just don't turn everything over to them. But here's another thing. The educating of children hasn't been turned over to the church either. No matter how much you might, that overlap's not there. As parents are to do this, they've got the responsibility. And yes, children need to be taught. They do. There's just no question about that. A commentator on the radio calls children when they're born. He says, some people think this is insulting, but I have to understand what he's saying. They're born and they have a skull full of mush. In other words, you know, they're not born with the knowledge of a PhD. They get that way. But they start off, you know, kind of on the zero level. Then they go from there and they add things and they learn things and so on. And we know that, don't we? You learn things in books, don't you? Anybody here ever learn things in books? Yeah. Did you ever learn anything from the School of Hard Knocks? Oh, plenty. Yeah, we're very familiar with all of that. Sure. And that's how children do this and they grow. And parents should be along there assisting them along the way. Sometimes now, it's a good deal to let them do something on their own to see if they're going to be able to do it or not. And don't just dive in there with, you know, step-by-step instructions every bit of it. Now, sometimes, but you got to turn them loose and let them do it on their own. Sean used to help me. I used to do pretty good changing out the old screw-in fuse panels to breakers. I just loved doing that. And Sean would help me to do that. He's a better carpenter than I am. So if we had to do something to change, it was always better if he did it, because then it looked like, you know, somebody did it with a saw and other things like that. If I did, it looked like I did it with a hatchet. So it was always good. You know, we were a good team on this. And although I would never let him do the hookup, I wouldn't let him do that. Wouldn't do it. I'd do that myself. So one day, we were at Martha's parents doing that for them. And he wanted to go outside where the meter base is at and do the hookup. And I thought, well, okay. He'd seen me do it lots of times. And he's right on the other side of me, you know, right on the other side of the wall. Not much insulation in that house either, I'll tell you. Anyway, right over there, and there was a hole there where the wires went through. So communication wasn't a problem with him or me. Him on the outside, me on the inside. And I'm in there doing a few things, and I would say, how's it going? Okay. And this went on and on and on. Okay. That's all he kept saying. Okay. And he was in there, and he was being so cautious, because the top of that's hot. I mean, really hot. And he's being so cautious and everything. And I asked him several times. He's working on the first wire. I don't know. Half hour. And he got that thing bent and put in under the lug and tightened down. And he said, I could hear him out. I hear the pride in his voice. I got her, Dad. I got the first one. Good. You know how long it took him to get that second one? About 2 minutes. Half hour for the... But you know what? Sooner or later, if we continued in that work, which we did, he was going to have to do that kind of thing. And so you let him. You know. Sometimes you've got to cut the apron strings. Sometimes you have to let that one go on their own. So they need to be taught. But they need to be taught certain things. And I think they need to be taught certain things that you can find are biblically based. They need to have, you know, there need to be taught respect. You know, that there should be respect for others is the idea. How about respect for parents? Now, Colossians chapter 3 and verse 20 tells us this, which, by the way, is kind of parallel to Ephesians 6. But it says, children, be obedient to your parents in all things. This is well-pleasing to the Lord. Well, not only what you ought to do, but why you ought to do it. And how about over there in 1 Timothy chapter 2, verses 1 through 4, where it says that, you know, the prayers ought to be offered for those in high positions. And you think to yourself, well, yeah, you know, so parents ought to be paying attention, you know, to these rulers and kings and other things. Yes, sure. And children should too. And where are they going to learn that? Well, first of all, they learn it from their parents. That's the first place they're going to learn it. Yeah. So respect for us. You know, that's just what you got to see. I'm afraid we've seen a broad disappearance of this. Respect for parents kind of vanishing away. How about respect for you know, law officials, people elected, and other things like that? Tell me. Has that disappeared? That's disappeared in the last 5 years. Hasn't it? Yeah. Really has. And what's another thing? Well, how about, working? Just good, honest work. There's nothing wrong with that. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3 and verse 10. That even when we were with you, we used to give this order. If anyone is not willing to work, then he is not to eat either. Working with the hands. Good, honorable work. There's nothing wrong with that at all. And also, now, while, you know, if you have a job and you make money, make a salary, you ought to have a sense of that there's a proper use for that. I've got here Luke chapter 16, verse 11. I liked it. Therefore, if you have not been faithful in the use of unrighteous wealth, who will trust the real riches to you? So in other words, if you've been unfaithful, well, that sounds like that's not praise here. So you ought to be faithful to unrighteous wealth, to mammon, it might say in some translations. We ought to have a certain amount of respect for that. Oh, well, it's just unrighteous wealth, so let's just, you know, treat it as though it's nothing. and carry on like that, and it doesn't make any difference. It's not going to have any influence or any effect on any outcome whatsoever. Really? Now we know better than that. So they need to understand the proper uses of this, especially when it says who's going to trust real riches to you and not monetary riches, other things. So you're learning kind of a twofold lesson here with this. Yeah. Children need to be taught, and they can be taught this by their parents, about the permanency and sanctity of marriage. Hebrews chapter 13, verse 3, verse 4, that marriage is honorable, the bed undefiled. That we need to have that kind of teaching. Let me see. But if we turn the teaching over to the government, that's what the government's going to teach our children, right? I don't think so. What's the government going to teach our children about marriage to begin with? What are they going to teach about it now? What is it? Huh? Are they even going to teach it's a man and a woman? No. They're not going to do that. Think about it. Anyway, but I think it's the parents' place to do that, not the government's. Parents ought to be doing this, teaching this kind of thing. You know, I know a couple of people. Know them well. I never met two people in all of my... I think of the hundreds, maybe thousands, maybe a couple thousand people I've known over the last several years. And I think to myself, I never met two people who were more opposites in all of my life. How in the world it ever got started and how it continued is absolutely a marvel. 60-some years. Different everything you could think of. Disposition, you name it. Temperament. Whatever you want to say, they were different. And some people would say, well, I don't think that they really love each other. You used to hear that all the time. And I was in the hospital room after the husband had had some serious surgery. And when it came time, you know, family was invited, come on in. And I got to watch that when the husband, laying there in that bed with all them tubes and everything, got to see his wife, she got to see him. After that, you'd never say, these two people, though so opposite, didn't love each other. If you'd been there that day, you'd never say that. All that would just be gone from your mind. Why? How did it work? Because these were two people that were old school, much older school than me. And marriage was for life. There was a permanency to it. There was a sanctity to it. And that was the thing. Even among people that aren't members of the church, yeah. Yeah. They get it. You know what they do. There's also the need to be taught how to faithfully serve God. By obeying the gospel, you know, we talked about that in Bible study. 2 Thessalonians chapter 1, verse 7, 9, the Lord will come in flaming fire, taking vengeance on them that know not God and obey not the gospel of Jesus Christ. And he tells them, don't be worried about that, because you can obey the gospel and avoid this kind of thing. But there's some people who do not know God and have not obeyed the gospel. This is what they're looking forward to, and it's a terrible thing. Doesn't want anybody to go through that. I don't either. Neither should anybody. But people live their lives as though that's not going to happen. Well, guess again. It's going to happen to some. I think it'll take some by surprise. Sure it will. But parents need to teach their children about obeying the gospel. That's right. Faithfully serving the Lord. That's part of that. Now here's another part here. How about by living godly, faithful lives until death? Now you may think, and sometimes this is the case with me, that I've got the wrong verse up there. You may think, oh, now, wait a minute, Terry. That's that Revelation 2:10, be thou faithful unto death, I'll give you a crown of life. Yeah, this time, it's not a mistake. This time, that's the passage I meant to put up there. And I want us to consider it along this line. Because I think it's a real good one. And I think it goes along perfectly with chapter 2 and verse 10. Look at chapter 2 and verse 19. There in Revelation. I know your deeds and your works. And your love and faith and service. You know, a lot of times in to every one of these churches in Revelation, I know your works. I know all about you. I've got the record on you. What else does he say? He says, and that your deeds or your works, now watch this now, of late are greater than at first. What's that tell you? That they've been faithful in it. That tells you that they're those people like over there in chapter 2 and verse 10. They're going to be faithful unto death. And not only are they going to do it, you see what else is said there? As time has gone on, you've become stronger. Your faith has increased. Your devotion to God has increased. Because what? Your deeds of late are greater than at first. With all that I've got in me, I hope that could be something said of me. I hope that could be something said of all of us. That we're increasing as we go along. And to be faithful unto death, well, it's not going to stop. We're still doing that. Now, people can retire from a number of things. You retire from your job, retire from this, retire from that. Things change. But you don't retire from being a Christian. Care what the age is. You don't do that. Right to the end. Works become greater as time goes on. Now one more. The parallel text over here in Colossians chapter 3. It's a word of caution, I guess. You might say another one. Colossians chapter 3 and verse 21. Now, fathers, do not exasperate your children so that they will not lose heart. I kind of like that. I think the old translation has, provoke not your children to anger lest they be discouraged. Well, that's fine. Means the same thing. But I don't know. Somehow or another, that exasperate in there, that just kind of reached out and grabbed a hold of me. Do not exasperate your children. If you've ever been exasperated, you know what that feels like. But how might they lose heart? How might they become, you know, discouraged here? Well, they could do that if we would make unreasonable demands of them. Our expectations are too great. Greater than what's possible for them to accomplish. Yeah. Unreasonable. Not reasonable demands. Unreasonable demands. Or perhaps it could be by punishing them excessively with a penalty that's unfit for the wrong. That works out a lot of ways. But you know, we try to be fair about it. And then how about this? You can discourage them. They can lose heart by belittling them or constantly being negative. I always wonder sometimes, watch this stuff. Had a man at work one time. Talked about how hard he had been raised. Since I wasn't there, I'll just grant that what he was saying was the truth. And if it was the truth, he'd really had a hard upbringing. And his dad must have been an absolute terror. If half of what he said was true, it'd really been awful. And that same man, while having a strong dislike for his father and all that kind of thing, would then in turn do the same things with his own children. There's a word for that. I think the word's insanity. To do the same thing to your kids that you despised as a child. I have no other word for it, but that it's just insanity to do that kind of thing. What should he have done? Recognize that that was a terrible thing, and I'll never do it to my kids. Well, the lesson is yours by conclusion. Take your songbooks, turn to the song that's been selected. I think sometimes, I've done lots of things that I've been, I think, successful, and I've been kind of, you know, proud of what things I've done, things overcome, and other things like, anyway, I still think that one of the best things I've ever done was to be a father. My son preaches, my daughter's married to a preacher. That means a lot. I know that parents who have faithful children, that means a lot. I know it does. You know, the thing about it is, I remember when Martha told me that she was expecting Jenny. And I mean, there was the, of course, the euphoria for a few days, you know. And after I stepped off of that cloud that was about that high, I got to think about it seriously. And I thought to myself, you know, they don't come with an instruction manual. I didn't realize at the time the Bible would be a good one, but they don't come with instruction. And I got to thinking about the seriousness of it. And I thought, oh boy, you know what? You do what you think is right with your child. And when do you know for sure, for absolute certain, that you've done the right thing? You find out when they're grown up. Guess what? Too late for a do-over. It's a one-shot deal. And I think that just sobered me up so much. I realized how serious this is. And how much, you know, you can play in shaping them. So, one of the first things and the best things to do for a father, for his children, is to be a Christian. Second thing is to live like a Christian. Best things you can do. We'd be happy to assist anyone today to become a child of God, believe in Jesus Christ, repent of your sins, be baptized for the forgiveness of your sins, become a Christian, and then live faithful unto death, increasing all the way, and showing your children that being a Christian is an important thing. What a great lesson. If there's someone we can help today in your subject to the invitation, why don't you come all together, we stand and sing.